coming at you live from the Departures Lounge at Moscow Sheremetyevo. It's Tux Radar Podcast, Series 5, Episode 11. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm, shall I say, Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, there's news, there are discoveries. There may or may not be a Speak Your Brains.
There are Speak Your Brains.
There are multiple Speak Your Brains. There's a report on our challenge. Can you remember what the challenge was? And there's an open ballot, which, despite being a lazy, throwaway, rubbish, and really, quite frankly, not worth the money you paid for it question.
Refunds for everyone.
Has garnered 90 responses. Also, despite it being potentially flame baity, again, I keep saying this, just reasoned.
It's fascinating.
Intelligent. It's brilliant. I love it. Keep it coming. The internet's fantastic, especially this bit of the internet. So that's the intro, people, in this episode. Oh, next bit. Subscribe.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Subscribe to Linux formats.
Subscribe to Linux format.
They have to say it backwards for it to go into their subliminal brains.
Only Graham could do the backwards voice. And that's at tinyurl.com/LXFOffer1. Also now available on Google Play.
Okay, in the news. Well, I guess the first item that's been everywhere this week is about a fellow passenger at Moscow Airport.
Our morning.
Edward Snowden. We haven't spotted him around. He's hiding somewhere.
He's inside the coffee machine. Yeah. That's the latest rumour.
No one's actually seen him here, but apparently he is. After escaping Hong Kong, maybe escaping Hong Kong, because apparently the US of A doesn't know his middle name. Is it James or is it Joseph? He got away. The America served Hong Kong. They sent this letter saying, don't let this chap escape. And Hong Kong was okay. And they were there looking for Edward Joseph Snowden. And Edward James Snowden happily got on a plane and flew away. Now, I have absolutely no evidence to back this up, but I like to believe this was a plan.
So he put on his Facebook account that he was called Edward Joseph Snowden.
Well, he was a sysadmin at the NSA.
Yeah.
They say they had read access to all this Google and Facebook stuff.
It's like Ferris Bueller, isn't it? And they're changing his grades.
Yeah, exactly. Just a bit of my, as well, update name where...
Yeah, because he must be using Linux, mustn't he?
Yeah.
So now he's just chilling out with Gerard Depardieu in Russia.
Indeed.
Crashing his moped and not paying much tax.
Yeah.
That's the life.
Although, as you say, no one's actually seen him here, so who knows? Well, Ecuador says it might take months for him to get asylum there, so he could have a long wait. Let's hope the facilities are good.
I mean, how is that going to work without Russian help? I don't know.
Well, he's not in Russia.
Yeah.
He's the other side of the border at the airport.
Is that like a no... So what country is that? Like no man's land?
Yeah. It's like when you're crossing on land and you do go the passport check in one place and then you've got that little stretch of no man's land. And then you have the passport check in the other place.
Or that bridge at Chepstow where the signs for welcome to Wales and welcome to England are opposite sides of the bridge. So when you're actually on the bridge, you don't know where you are. You're in like Jersey or somewhere.
That's where all your money's stashed.
Just gaffer-taped to the bottom of the bridge.
Everyone knows where it is.
In more Hong Kong news... It seems that the Dirty West isn't the only organisations censoring stuff. Linux Format has been mysteriously disappearing en route to Hong Kong ever since issue 170, Hack the Web. Coincidence? We think not.
But we've had to strike Hong Kong off our must-visit list.
No, isn't Mike going there soon?
Is he?
Is it Hong Kong or is it Singapore?
Oh, no. I heard it was Moscow Airport.
It's Mike EJS Saunders.
This case, the one thing that sort of struck me about this case is the contrast between the way governments have handled it, because the British government has been pretty well marred in the scandal as well. It's been shown to be spying and everything. But the American government made this big thing, they're hunting this guy around the world, blah, blah, blah. Pretty much all the government's done is William Hague just stood up in the Commons and went, "This is not the espionage you're looking for." And everyone's just let it drop. Now everyone's going on about PRISM and doesn't seem to care that the US, the UK is spying on everyone as well. So in a rather horrible way, we take our hat off to the British government's public relations team.
And their backroom chats with the editors of all the newspapers telling them it'd be illegal for them to write about it or publish anything about it or discuss it in any way. And we just carry on as normal.
Yeah.
I take my ill-fitting Notting Hill Carnival baseball cap off to William Hague.
Yeah, in that big meeting of editors of newspapers, they obviously didn't invite you. To their peril.
Yeah, just wait for the next issue of Linux Format.
Super injunction hasn't landed on our desk.
No. What super injunction?
So if there's no podcast in 2 weeks, someone call the police.
But not the police in this country.
Not the British police.
The United Nations.
Someone tell Ecuador. So we're going to go on to a more outcast scaring men in suits. Richard Stallman. Inducted into the Internet Hall of Fame. And Aaron Schwartz.
So, the Internet Hall of Fame, isn't that just the internet?
like results on Google?
It's a website.
It's a website.
It might be more than a website, I don't know. But it certainly has a website, and they've now got a picture of Richard Stallman on it.
There are loads of websites with pictures of Richard Stallman on them.
Yes, but this one says Internet Hall of Fame. Linus Torvalds got it, I don't know, was it last year, year before? He got it a while ago. And now Stallman, in accepting it, Stallman had to say, I've got it written down here, "Now that we have made the internet work, the next step is to stop it being a platform for massive surveillance and make it work in a way that respects human rights, including privacy."
Very noble.
That's Richard Stallman.
Yeah.
More people receiving honours. Eben Upton of the Raspberry Pi Foundation has got a silver medal from, I forgot to write it down, but I'm pretty sure it's the Royal Society of Engineering.
That's your mate, isn't it, Eben?
Yeah, my mate Eben.
Chilling out on Beer Island in Cambridge.
Indeed.
Watching the cows and the punts.
In case you're wondering why it's only a silver medal, you might think, well, the Raspberry Pi is fantastic, surely it should be more. It's restricted to a silver medal because he's got less than 22 years experience. That's where it works.
Great.
Says the Royal Society of Bureaucracy and Engineering. Computer says silver medal.
There's a really good interview with him, Eben, in this issue of Linux Format, and it's the one that Tux Radar listeners contributed to with their questions. I will put it online next week, probably, when we've got a little bit more time. That's the only reason why I haven't put it online. But if you want to read it now, it's in the mag.
Some open sourcing news. Adobe have open sourced their C++ Flash compiler. That's C++2 Flash compiler. Not that anyone cares about Flash anymore. And Citrix have open sourced the Xen server, which is mostly open source already, but it was a few extra bits and bobs that go along with it. So, good news there.
Yep. So what does the Flash compiler do?
Compiles C++ code to Flash. So do what, an SWF. So it's just another way of making Flash.
Right.
Using the hideous complexity of C++.
Yes, into the hideous insecurity of Flash.
That sounds mental. Why?
I don't know. Why not?
Because there are lots of better ways of doing it.
Probably. But should you wish to do it, you can now do it open source.
Except for there won't be any Flash player on the next to play it with unless you use Chrome.
Yes. Well, not for another, like, 3 or 4 years. Ubuntu Phone's got a carrier club. Sounds fun, doesn't it? Club of carriers.
200 million people.
Doesn't sound fun at
all. It's a club. Clubs are fun. They'll be there eating their jelly and custard and blowing their little horns.
Carrying things.
Carrying things. Carrying the jelly and custard. It's basically all the phone carriers, the network providers, I guess, saying they're going to use Ubuntu Phone should it come to pass next year.
So they've said that they might do something if something else happens that might happen.
Well, they said they're probably going to do something if the phone comes out. And Ubuntu have said, well, Canonical have said, you get early access to it. In the same way, like when the iPhone first launched, and was it 02, got it exclusively for a while. It'll be the same with the Ubuntu phone.
Okay. But there's a club of them, so it's not that exclusive.
Well, yeah, but in each country.
Ah, I see.
I think it's EE in the UK.
All right.
All right, okay. So,
I get it.
Right. Well,
doesn't that go against what the Ubuntu people told me is that a lot of carriers don't like the way that control is confined to just one, control of the iPhone or control of the Android platform is confined to just one manufacturer. Isn't this just giving the same sort of monopoly or quasi-monopoly power in a different form?
I guess money changes hands when they do it.
Never.
So
I'm a little bit confused because presumably they're going to have to release the source code. I mean, it's all built
And anyone could probably put it on their phone if it works.
Exactly. You
know, like an S4 or whatever it happens to be.
But I guess these people will have the special Mark Shuttleworth handshake.
Yeah. I really wish them the best of luck in making it work. I don't know.
Genuinely, it does look really nice.
Yeah. I don't understand anything about the world of mobile phones and the deals that go on with carriers and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. They've got some smart people at Canonical.
I'm not sure there's space anymore. It's getting very crowded and I think Jolla and Firefox are going to come in first.
Mm.
But we shall see. In a swift about turn, the UK government no longer prefers open source in its purchasing guidelines.
Mm. That was swift. It was only like 4 weeks ago we were saying it did, weren't we?
Well, they've had this clause in the purchasing, I don't know, whatever they call it, principles or whatever, for years, saying they'll take open source unless they'll always default to open source. You have to provide a reason for not to be open source. Mm-hmm. But it's been completely ignored. Now they're just saying they'll take the best technology and a lot of the time that'll be open source and a lot of the time that won't be open source. And to be honest, to a certain extent, I think I actually prefer the new contract because it should be competing on a level playing field.
Mm, yeah. You
know, select open source for its technological advantages. And I think a lot of the time it's not. It's selected proprietary solutions are selected because of
lobbying.
Lobbying and also.
But there's nobody lobbying on. There's nobody lobbying on behalf of open source.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that there's not many. It's sort of a chicken and the egg scenario. No one's done a big rollout of open source in the UK, so no one's got the skills to pitch it. Everyone's been doing big rollouts of other things, so they're pitching what they can do. But hopefully that'll start to change. But this isn't.
Well, I suppose it couldn't do any worse than the preference for open source, you know, if it manages to get some kind of traction.
Yeah. And our last lineup in the news is Ouya, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's been launched and it hasn't had a particularly good reception.
What is it?
It's this little Android games console, what's it? So you get this little cube that you plug into your telly and you get a little, you know, joypad type controller thing and you play Android games on it.
Kickstarted, wasn't it?
It was kickstarted to big fanfare a while back and then now it's been released. And
I never really understood the attraction in the first place of having a games console that just played Android games.
Yeah, I mean, initially I thought you'd just have the Play Store and just download games and play them, but obviously all the games would be designed for touchscreen.
Mm.
But it's not. They're their own games. A lot of them, I assume, are available on Android anyway. But they've made this big thing about how there's so many games available. But there's like 150 games, which isn't inconsiderable, but
yeah.
If you're going to make a big deal about how many games are available, it needs to be more than 150.
Yeah. Mm. And you could probably get an Xbox 360 or a PS3 for a similar price.
Yeah. So it's an interesting idea.
Also, many of the reviews in the first look at it said that it felt really cheaply constructed, and really there's nothing more in it than, you know, a generic Android piece of circuit board and the controller.
True, but it's £100. What do you expect?
Yeah.
It's cheaply constructed, yes, because it's cheap. You know, it's not subsidised like the big consoles are.
Yes.
But at the same time, it has to be effective. If you're going to do that, it has to offer something that something else doesn't.
It's true. And I think a lot of the reviews have been unfair because they've been comparing it to bigger gaming platforms,
yeah,
not looking at what it is. But, yeah, we'll see. When more game, I think it's going to take a while for the platform to establish, and we'll see over the next year or so,
yeah,
whether or not it really does.
I guess if publishers can release their games with very little effort, and they'll see no reason why not to. I mean, they will release their normal Android games to the Wii or whatever it's called, and you know, that might make a bit of a distraction.
Yeah.
You know, Angry Birds from your living room couch. I don't know.
Yeah. And actually, I said that was the last bit, but there is one more bit of games-related news. There's still 5 days of the latest Humble Bundle. So buy, I don't know, it's about 8 or 9 games now. DRM-free for Linux and Android and Mac and Windows if you use those. Pay what you like. Great stuff.
And Linux gaming in general, it's difficult to stay on top of the releases and the news. It's just brilliant.
Just game after game after game. It's
just today, I think I read, or yesterday, that Valve had released their 1.3 of their Steam SDK for people modifying their games, and for the first time it includes Linux in the SDK.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just great. Yeah. I mean, Portal went out of beta on Steam. The Steam client's out of beta. There's loads of games. Many of those games in the Humble Bundle can be added to your Steam account in Linux.
They can't, actually. Well, the two I tried this morning, they're on Steam, but they're not on Steam as Linux. So you can download the Linux packages and install them, but I couldn't. So I only tried two. But they're both available through the Ubuntu store and not on Steam.
Well, I bought the same bundle, and I must admit there were a couple of games that didn't, but like all the rest of them did.
Okay.
It was like 6 or 7 of them worked. But yeah, there was one or two that weren't there. It might happen because they often go back and make those things work.
So that's the news.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben. So discoveries of the week. I haven't got any dramatic revolutionary discoveries. As I said on IRC before coming over here, it's like I've got 28 minutes, and actually Count Chocula gave me one, which was, looking for pullrequests.com. So pull requests on GitHub are basically feature requests. And this is a website that allows projects to advertise themselves and advertise what kind of work they need to be done, what kind of things they need to be fixed, and how people can get involved. And also for people to go and get involved and pick and choose the kind of things they want to get involved with and fix projects. It seems like a really good idea. It's a really good site. And as I've jumped into that, the other thing that I discovered was, and this is going to be one of those things where everyone says, I've known that for years, but in a terminal window, you can select a square of text, you holding down Control and Alt and then click dragging across the text. So rather than selecting straight across all the columns, say for example if you have a multi-column display and screen, you can just display select a square of text on one of those columns using Control Alt and then select. And then the other thing is that Google Reader, I think, closes next week. So I've been looking at alternatives, and the best alternative I've found at the moment is Feedly, which imports everything with a single click if you signed into your Google account. And so far I've found it's not quite as good as Google Reader. I don't quite like the UI in the same way, but it's very fast and it's almost exactly the same information presented in the same way. So it's quite a good replacement, but I'm still looking.
I've got a few discoveries this fortnight. The first, it's actually inspired by Edward Snowden. His news came out, was it's on the run, that he's distributed encrypted copies of his files to various news organisations around the world. And obviously the question came up, how can you do this in such a way that you don't want them to have to read it now because you want to, you know, hold stuff back, but you want them to be available should you go missing somehow. You know, obviously you don't trust the news organisation with the key because they'll just read it and publish all the stuff that you don't want
published. And publish the password.
And publish the password. And it turns out there's this encryption method called SSS, four S's, Shamir's Secret Sharing Scheme. And the idea is, it doesn't work like normal encryption where you encrypt something with a key. You take a single block of whatever data and you encrypt it a number of times, for example, 10 times. And each one of those is a separate file that you can distribute to different people. And you say, look, if you don't hear from me for a couple of weeks, you know, or you see me in an orange jumpsuit on a plane to Cuba, get in contact with these other 10 people and you can combine them to get the original file. But obviously, you know, your NSA might off a few of these journalists as well. You can't guarantee that all 10 will be available. So you can set it. So, for example, any three of them can be combined to create the original file.
Cool. Yeah,
so it's a
excellent
way of distributing your top secret stuff, and you trust them not to. So they can't. You hope they won't collaborate without you telling them to. And it's a novel method of encryption for people on the run.
It's just like a spy thriller, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got that music from The Bourne Identity in my head.
And there's an implementation of it. Well, it's in the Debian repositories as SSSS, four S's. It's probably in other stuff as well. Simple to use. Yeah, we've got it set up in a terminal just at the end of this bank of chairs, should Snowden wish to come and use it. A couple of other discoveries. Fractal, one of the games in this humble bundle. I don't know how to describe it. The closest game is probably Crack Attack. You're sort of shifting stuff around, but it's in a hexagonal pattern. You can sort of add stuff and you have to create bunches of the same color. Yeah, it's good fun. Yeah, Android and Linux. Great stuff. And the final thing I was discovering was orcs. Now, you might think this is related to last fortnight's discovery when I started reading Lord of the Rings, but it's not. Different type of orc, AWK. And also, it's not the scripting what's it.
Is it the bird?
It's the bird. It's puffins and razorbills and whatnot. I went to see them in Wales. They're the closest thing the Northern Hemisphere has to penguins. So it's kind of Linux related.
Yeah.
Sort of. And they waddle around. They can just about fly, but it's really uncontrolled and it looks quite funny.
And, it's like a wing, like somebody jumping off Everest in a wingsuit.
It kind of is. And just imagine someone falling through the air, flapping their arms as fast as they can, trying to stay up with a comedy nose on. That's pretty much what a puffin looks like when it's flying.
Like Penguin in the old Batman series.
Yeah. So they're out in Scomer Island in Pembrokeshire, Wales. Good stuff.
Brilliant. Great discoveries. Thanks, Ben.
I've discovered, I can't remember whether I've discovered this already, but I think I may have discovered GNOME Tweak Tool. Have I discovered that before?
Yeah, I think you did.
Have I? Oh, sorry about that. In that case, I've discovered Frippery, which is a series, it's a selection of plugins for the GNOME 3 shell, and the website says that they're for crusty old stick in the muds, i.e. people who just want their desktop to work. And there's a big bunch of them. There's a script for moving the clock, which in GNOME 3 is at the top and in the middle of the screen. There's a script for moving that to the left, because apparently some people are so annoyed by this that there's call for moving it to the left or to the right. I don't know.
So shouldn't it be on the right?
It should be on the right. Well, I don't know. I don't really care about that. But what I do care about is that there's a Frippery script for adding a bottom panel. So when you minimize a window, it shows up in the bottom panel, rather than having to press Alt or move your mouse up to the top left to see all the windows you've got open. You can just see them in the panel, just like you used to be able to do in GNOME 2. Incroyable. And there's one to add an off button to switch it off rather than suspend?
That's back in the new version.
That's back in. Okay, well, I was using an old version. Well, I was using Fedora 17. I'm not sure what version of GNOME 3 that has, but anyway, it's still there. And there's also a script to add an applications menu, so you don't need to go into the zoomy, swishy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You just go up and click on applications and get the list of applications. Again, just like in ye olden times. And I did have another discovery, but I've forgotten what it is.
It's always the way.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. A pseudo discovery. Probably already knew this. If you have £200,000 in your pension pot and buy an annuity at current rates, you'll only get £8,000 a year. Now, assuming you retire at 70, which for a 33-year-old man, which is what I am, is not unreasonable, that means that to have won that bet, like for it to be worthwhile, I have to live beyond the age of 94.
I had a similar meeting with the
pensions guys. Which is silly.
The confusion for me is, right, they're like, you need to put in money at this rate, and they have this big calculator, and they'll go, well, we'll assume your pension pot gets an interest of 7%.
whoa, stop right there.
Yeah, first of all, that sounds a bit off to me. But secondly, assuming that is true, which you're telling me it is, that would then make me better off sticking with the 7% interest than spending it all on this £8,000 a year.
Yes. It's almost like they're in it for themselves, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost as if the government is colluding with the financial services industry.
He seemed to struggle to grasp my confusion over this. I'm like, well, you know, there's £6,000 a year going missing between what you're telling me I can get as interest and what you're telling me I can get as an annuity. If there's one thing I want a pensions advisor / accountant to be able to do, it's basic math. And he seemed to have trouble with it.
Ben, I've just noticed you've not got your pop shield on your microphone.
I haven't, no. I realised halfway through, and I thought, well, if I do it on now, it's going to rock and roll all over the place.
Cool. I'm really looking forward to getting this recorded and mixed and edited and stuff so that I can listen to it and see how Ben sounds.
Yeah, see what the pop shield does or doesn't do.
I'll put it on now, and you can write in and tell us if it's any good.
So, there we go. That's a plethora of discoveries. Subscribe to Linux Forums.
It's what's next.
It's the halfway reminder. Subscribe. Rants and raves on an ad hoc basis. Speak your brains.
Yes.
The challenge report.
No.
And the open ballot.
Yes. Yes, the lazy open ballot. Speak your brains. Okay, I've had a couple of quite good ones. I'll start off with one from Dan Simon Milan. I have to be careful there because it's almost my favourite wine, Don Simone. this is his ode to Slackware, aka Rants of a Madman. And I don't know if I should say this, you know, with kind of medieval lute music playing in the background, but anyway, here it goes. They say that typing friend in Elvish on the command prompt will give the user root access to Slackware. And from what I have seen, this might well very, very well be true. I find this strange and seemingly ancient piece of software has provided me with incredibly usability and fun. Is it my distro of choice? It is my distro of choice. Why? I don't really know. Is it because I find text more comprehensive than drop shadows? Is it due to the fact that I find speed, stability, and simplicity more user-friendly than a slow and buggy system with a nice GUI? Perhaps it's simply a question of a deep-rooted craving for the bizarre and geeky. If you yourself were born to the colour purple, if you think fonts should be fabulous and that GUI was a cool concept, if you really feel that a Linux box without Fortran and OCaml is like a chocolate cake without ketchup and Synap, don't know what that is, if you think NetHack sounds like something Anonymous would do, then rejoice in your own sanity and good taste. keep safe with the reassuring within the reassuring walls of the friendliness that the GUI lovingly provides. Take care never to venture into the dangerous jungles of the command line where the dark night lurks behind evergreen fonts, where hairy hackers lurk in gloomy IRC channels and ancient tales tell of lost Usenet groups and scripts full of magical language carved when the world of computers was new and its meaning was already lost by the time of the great browser wars. There's only one more paragraph. Is it a sign of madness when seeing smileys in a conf file makes you smile? Are you a lunatic when you get a kick out of playing music from the command line? Should you see a real shrink when you find yourself talking to the Emacs psychoanalyzer? Probably. But to paraphrase a Norwegian saying, mad people have an excellent time. Okay, thanks, Don Simon. Right, and this one is actually an idea from Mike Edwards, who emailed me to say that he'd left a load of Linux formats at his local GP's surgery last week. He said the receptionist was very pleased to receive the mags and asked me to go right ahead and put them in the waiting room. The only stipulation was apparently that they had to be less than 12 months old. His idea was, why don't we ask the listeners to do the same thing, to not only spread the good word about Linux, but spread the good word about Linux format. I said it's a great idea. I also said if he wanted to get in touch with his address, or if anybody else wants to get in touch with their address, we could send some of our spare copies out to you if you want to do the same thing at your dentist, GP surgery or lug. I mean, we sometimes have spare copies. So that's it. Email me and I'll send some spare copies out to you.
Do we still have spare copies?
We have some. We have some for the older issues, yeah.
Are we not allowed them for the newer issues?
Well, I think we still got a box last issue. So.
Okay, that's cool.
I still think we'll get, you know, 10 or 12 copies there. They were both the Speak Your Brains. Excellent. Thanks.
That brings us roaring, rip-roaringly successfully into our challenge report.
We've had one of those really busy times, isn't it? Just the ongoing Chris thing.
Yes.
We need to come up with something else.
We do. What, another challenge or another segment to replace the challenge?
I think the challenge is good, but yeah, we haven't really done one, have we?
No.
And we did ask, you know, to challenge other people as well, and no one's got back to us, but that's too lazy a question.
I've just had a brilliant idea. As a challenge, why don't we try a distro from yesteryear? Just because we've got all the discs still kicking about, haven't we?
Yeah.
We can install, you know, Mandriva Spring 2007, something like that.
Yeah, that's a good... Let's try it. We only have to spend half an hour doing it.
Give it a go.
Yeah. And listeners, they can try it too and tell us what you've chosen and what it was like. You know, in the comments or email or IRC or whatever, and we can read out your thoughts next time when we talk about Mandriva 7.2. I'll try that. That was the first one I successfully installed in whatever it was.
Awesome.
1999. That'll be quite good.
I was going to see if I can find Sled. the first SUSE Linux Enterprise desk that was. I had that for a while. And now it's time for Open Ballot. Anyone dissatisfied with the quality of this fortnight's open ballot question can write to the usual address and we'll refund them in full. The question, in all of its perfunctory, disrespectfully curt manner, was, what's your favourite Linux desktop environment for Linux? Are you using the latest GNOME 3 or a customised KDE? Do you like desktop Bling or a black and white CLI? Do you use a mainstream choice or an esoteric option? First of all, the numbers. At my count, and my maths GCSE was a long time ago, so these figures may be rusty. We have 18 people picked KDE as their favourite, 12 XFCEs, 11 Cinnamons, 7 GNOME shells, and 7 mates, and 7 Unities. 1 vote for Enlightenment, 3 for Fluxbox, 1 for FVWM2, 3 votes for OpenBox, 2 votes for AwesomeWM,
One vote for Metro. Thanks, Bill Gates.
Who forgot it's now modern.
One vote for Rat Poison. One vote for KDE 3.5. And two votes for They're All Awesome. Five votes for Depends on the Hardware.
Wow.
Doesn't that just show how far we've come since ye olden days of GNOME versus KDE?
Yeah.
I mean, one thing that really surprised me, apart from the variety, is how few votes GNOME 3 had compared with KDE.
Really? I was surprised how many it got.
Really?
Yeah.
But I got used to thinking of KDE as being the second or third most used desktop.
Yeah.
I mean, at the time when, 4.0 was released and everybody, when Linus Torvalds went on about the insanity of such an unstable and unpredictable release, it's like KDE was kind of dead to a lot of people.
It kind of is. Like, if you look at the way... If you think of GNOME 3 and Cinnamon and Mate and XFCE as being all the same kind of thing,
yes, true,
because they all use GTK, then GNOME or the GNOME family still comes out way ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, KDE is like the unifying. KDE is the UKIP. Desktop environment. It stands on its own and collects its own. Oh dear, yes. what's your favourite desktop environment, Ben?
I've been using loads at the moment, to be honest. And I have to say, I don't want to be a cop-out, but they are genuinely all really good. There's none that I don't like. There's none other than GNOME 3 that I don't like. And I'd probably struggle to use Rat Poison because I'm a mouse addict. I seem to change a favourite one every week or two, to be honest. I do like Unity. But just for sheer simplicity, a lot of the time I just go for Mate because it works and it doesn't hog too many resources.
Yeah. Let's get stuck in. We'll come back to you, Graham. Don't worry, it's not that we don't care. But we've got so many excellent responses to the open ballot that we just better plow into them. And also, I've not done what I normally do is in order them this time because I had to go to a stupid pensions meeting to find out how poor I'm going to be when I'm old. So, KDE Verified says, KDE, power to the people. KDE for the win. I've heard it said time and time again that GNOME is for power users, and in the same breath, KDE is too configurable. Cognitive dissonance, you think? KDE lets you configure what you want and ignore all the rest. Yes. Fluxbox. Anonymous Flux. Fluxbox, just because. Noob. Cinnamon, it's great, although at the risk of a beating, Unity after a few months of use isn't too bad.
I thought he was going to say after a few pints then.
Most of the Unity people, I mean, Alex Mayer says, I prefer Unity, hides behind rock.
Yeah.
There's like a
is that our fault?
Shamefacedness. It's just, I don't know. We'll come to them. We'll come to them in due course. XFCE, Synonymous Penguin. XFCE is my preference on Ubuntu and OpenSUSE. As a side note, after using Unity at work for over a year, I tried to switch to KDE. Tried. Anonymous Blumvixer says, Unity for my Acer C7 Chromebook. KDE on Ubuntu 3.04 and for my Dell Latitude, and XFCE for my Nexus 7 and HP touchpad.
Did he say he had XFCE on a Nexus 7?
That's what he says.
I'd be really intrigued to see how that worked.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem to me to be a particularly touch-friendly.
No, you just think that the menu would be so small when you left click to do something.
And a lot of it is quite little and bitty.
Yeah.
How does the touchscreen know what's a right click to open a menu on the desktop and what's a left click?
I don't know.
Two fingers, yeah, you're right. Maybe he's just got a great big panel with big buttons on it.
Anyway, tailoring your software to fit your hardware, it seems quite a revolutionary idea. Dizzy Lizzie, hello, my delectably accented penguin guardians. I'm a big fan of GNOME 3, though not necessarily because it's any good. Mike Saunders, hi Mike. XFCE, another vote for XFCE. Of course, I'm a proper XFCE fan, having used it for years, way before anyone switched to it because of GNOME 3 shenanigans. Yeah, that's right, Mike, you're cooler because you're cool because you heard of this band before we did. So you're
is that Mike Swartner's unverified?
He's not verified, so it might not be him.
On a related note, how did the hipster burn his mouth? Because he ate his pizza before it was cool. I suspect Mike Saunders, not verified, may have a burnt mouth.
Ruffle. Simon Pittman uses FVWN2. Ivana Larchak says Unity. It got off to a slow start, but is now genuinely useful and just gets out of the way. I kind of agree, actually. It doesn't really get in the way. It just takes up the space. And
yeah.
There's a lot to like in Unity. I really think there is.
But this is, I mean, I think she makes the best point. Not the best, obviously, for everybody else who's also made other points. The best of her points is, I used to spend hours getting my desktop just so, but since you can't customize Unity to any great extent, I've realized that the customization was a big waste of my time. I completely agree. That's why I can't be bothered with KDE. What's your favorite desktop environment?
Well, it's these days it's KDE. I've tried all the rest, and you know, I've been playing with Unity this week on the XPS 13 that Dell sent us, and it works really well. It looks really nice, and it's an excellent desktop. And I've just spent too long. There are things that I miss in KDE, I suppose, and you know, I've said it a lot over the years that we've done this, but I like the integration with KDE apps and the whole feel of the desktop. Things like Dolphin just wouldn't feel right, or Conqueror on a GTK based window manager. But I've got three or four Linux machines that I use quite regularly, and they've all got different desktops. I don't use KDE on them. I've got Cinnamon on a netbook, I've got Unity on this XPS 13 on the PC at home that I've got. I've got some XFCE just to keep it going fast. Yeah, I do think KDE's a great desktop.
Anonymous Penguin number 987 agrees, but only in Mageia. Because Mageia, as we know, do an awful lot of customization and configuration work on the user's behalf, and they get it absolutely spot on. His actual phrase is, KDE and Mageia, the best desktop OS ever created by mankind.
The one that I feel gets unfairly ignored a lot in this is Rosa. I think they do a really good version of KDE, yet it seems no one cares. I don't know, they've just never managed to break in.
Rosa, is that the offshoot of Mageia?
It's based on what used to be Mandrake. I don't know whether they got it from Mandriva or from Mageia originally. But they do quite a bit of development work as well, and they've fed stuff into KDE. Upstream.
Well, good. Thanks, Rosa people. Awkward Speaker says they're all awesome. Yeah, bit of a cop out, but he is right. I'd rather enjoy all the Linux DEs. Yes, even GNOME 3. I seem to find myself always back on Cinnamon and Mint. Yes. GNOME 3 for World Domination says, what's that word? Auch Katzelschwaff. P.S. I noticed my post has grown rather large. Even if it's too long to read out on the show, please try to pronounce my name. It means tail of a squirrel in Styrian. And I think if there are any Styrian listeners besides me, they would appreciate you pronouncing it on the show.
Does he provide a pronunciation guide?
Of course not. Everyone should speak Styrian. Auch Schwatzel. Auch Katzelschwurf. So, oak cat. An oak cat is a squirrel. And Schwurf. Or Katzelschwurf. Yeah. Genau. Ads 2000. I love Unity. Really, I don't understand why people can't change and accept it.
Yes.
Amazon ads can be removed very easily and will be fixed in October 2013. I don't understand why people can't change and accept something when there are umpteen free alternatives. Ray Woods, I'm waiting for Ikey Doherty to finish building Solus OS 2 from the ground up and the consort desktop environment. Now, I have tried Solus and liked it a lot at first impressions, but I had no idea that he was building his own desktop environment. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't actually. As you say, I have used Solus as well, and I think it's because he used to work on Mint, didn't he, Ikey?
I believe so.
And it's got the same sort of philosophy behind it. He seems to have the same sort of mindset as Clem, although having never met either of them, I could be wildly wrong on that.
You can glean a lot from a person's Twitter profile photograph. It doesn't matter, says I am Zimbo. Thanks.
Razer QT wasn't mentioned at all. Razer
no,
Qt.
Nobody mentioned that. Or Trinity.
Someone said 3.5.
There was a vote for 3.5, Which is, the same thing. I guess Razer QT isn't... It's not ready yet.
No, but it is a really good idea. It does everything that it needs to do, I think. And they're focusing on writing more kind of integrated apps for it, which it doesn't really need, I think. It'd be nice for KDE in the future to become less KDE-centric. I mean, that in having its own libraries and just more Qt compatible.
Did anyone mention LXDE?
Sultan of Swing mentions LXDE. On his old laptop and low-powered netbooks, I've opted recently for Lubuntu with LXDE, which suits me down to the ground.
I think Lubuntu is a really good version of LXDE. It's much nicer than the other ones I've used.
Ah. Give that a try.
That's the thing with those environments. They take a lot of sensible configuration from somebody who knows what they're doing.
Says the KDE user.
Well, yeah.
Ben Everhard, not verified.
Oh.
Says, I like KDE because of its sane defaults. I don't have to waste my time setting things. You are wrong, Ben Everhard. Nels. Hi, Neil. I try the others from time to time, but I always end up back on KDE, despite its limited configuration options. What? he's a least Gentoo user, of course. Gustavo de Oliveira likes Rat Poison. You mentioned Rat Poison earlier. What is it?
Well, it's one... I haven't used it in years and years, but it's one designed not to use the mouse. So it's keyboard-centric. The one
it's a tiling window manager.
Yeah, I mean, the one I have used recently, which I believe is roughly similar, is Xmonad.
Mm. We did a roundup on tiling window managers, which is quite a lot of fun. We also had a challenge once to use them. Do you remember?
Oh, that challenge.
Yeah. But I did do it, and it was you could, once I'd spent like a day playing around with, I can't remember which one I used, but I got into it.
Well, Xmonad didn't take long to learn to use. I mean, sort of, they have quite a nice little walkthrough on their website, and I'd say about 10 minutes I could use it comfortably.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was starting to see the advantages of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I could use it. Maybe if I was on a netbook, I think it would work really well.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got not a very good tracker pad and a small screen.
Yeah. I think the thing that always got me was a browser window. The screen size or resolution is never quite enough for a browser, half-width window to be quite enough.
Yeah.
So I needed that. And the whole width of the screen is too much.
Well, on Xmonad, you can move it across so you can have two-thirds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know about Rat Poison.
Plowing on with the comments. Awesome is awesome. Says verified, not verified, not verified. A dynamic window manager that allows me to tile when I'm in super hacking mode and to use it as a floating window manager when I'm in browsing gaming mode. I would not recommend it to my grandma, though. Next, somebody's mentioned cereal brands. Anonymous Penguin says XFCE. And Too Long in IT is the one vote for KDE 3.5. It has to be 3.5. 4.4.x is just too slow. Far too much excess baggage. The implementation of Plasmoids is rubbish and the cache sucks as it's too hard to get KDE 3.5 running on the new releases. I use KDE 4 apps, but with IceWM. And that brings us to the end, although there was one additional comment which happened after I printed that lot out.
That last track does sound like the perfect candidate for Razer QT.
Yes, yeah,
he's
you're
using
right.
IceWM and KD apps at the moment. Yeah. So what's his name?
Too Long in IT.
Too Long in IT.
Who is a regular inhabitant of this parish.
Yeah. If you get the chance, try out Razer QT and let us know what you think.
Yeah. That's it.
I like mate and cinnamon. Mainly that's because I like mint, I think.
I do think that it's still difficult to get over the fact that so much has changed since the GNOME 2.x days, which I thought was just a great desktop, looking so slick. I love the way that the applets were integrated into the top panel, which of course Unity's still got a lot of.
I'm trying to remember what I was using, but I think it was I booted up some old system and it did have GNOME 2 on it. And I have to say, it looked pretty out of date and just didn't feel as nice as new. I think Cinnamon and probably Mate as well are now better than GNOME 2 was. Yeah. And it's just the rose-tinted glasses of hindsight that make it seem so good.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And one thing that isn't rose-tinted or in any way other way, distorted, the next time you try Windows 8, think to yourself, how many other Windows desktops would I take over this? Because it's appalling. It really genuinely... I mean, no matter how much I dislike KDE, if I bash my head against the screen a couple of times and sit and stare at it for a couple of hours and look on the Wikipedia page and go on a couple of forums, I can normally work out how to get something done. But with Windows 8, you can't even do that. It's impossible. it's utterly, utterly terrible. And if that had been released on Linux, then it would either have withered and died and the developers would have gone off and done something else better, or the developers would have listened to the comments and improved it. So we win. We win hugely. Enormously. We're great.
Is that the end then?
I reckon so.
Subscribe. Like the at the end of the last one, we played some Creative Commons music that somebody suggested we play. Don't know if that worked. We had one person saying that they liked the music in the comments. I don't know whether to do the same. We haven't had any suggestions for this episode, so it involves me going to look for something when really short for time.
I could tap out a tune on the desk and release it under Creative Commons.
Yeah, yeah. But also, maybe it doesn't make sense just playing it at the end, you know, when none of us can actually hear it and make any comments on it. You know, it's kind of left hanging there, so maybe get more organised for next time when we haven't got doing a podcast in the middle of two deadlines.
Could we have just a one-off? No, I know it's as a podcast about Linux. We can't have a jukebox jury style feature every month. But yeah, like just once.
Yeah, okay.
Just as a one-off.
Yeah, let's try it. What? Listen to some. Listen to see if people suggest some Creative Commons music. We listen
give
to them and give up. Yeah, okay.
One of us could pretend to be from the NME and give everything a zero, apart from Razorlight or whatever the kids are listening to nowadays.
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. So, if you want us to listen to some music next time, send us your suggestions of the music we should be listening to. If you don't do that, we will choose, or I will choose, the music that we listen to from some random bag of stuff. And we'll do some kind of jukebox jury thing at the end of the next podcast for a bit of fun. So I'll probably just put Brad Sucks on the end of this one so as to not muddy the waters on Creative Commons music. Okay.
Awesome.
So see you in 2 weeks.
Cool beans.
Bye.